16 million colors. Wreak some havoc in your head. Welcome to Titancast, your home for Sega Saturn news, commentary, personal stories, and more. My name's Samuel, the SSG, and with me today, as always, we have Brian, our West Coast correspondent, hailing out of the great state of Washington. As well, we have a little bit of guest work going on today. Mr. Mike, over there from the Dream Pod, Dreamcast Junkyard, hailing out of Bristol, UK. As well, we have our Nebuchadnezzar, the Portugal man, the sleeper, Nuno. And we also got a little bit of Americanness, I guess you can call it, whatever you want to call it. But we got the guy over there from the hellacious zone of Arizona, Mr. Patrick from Sega Saturn Shiro. Today we got a little bit of a off-the-cuff record. I mean, we're kind of just, you know, playing it by ear of sorts. We got a little bit of news out of PAX West. We also got a little bit of a possible Sonic Racing. Shenmue 1 and 2 might be discussed. I mean, of course they are. I mean, really, people, it's Sega. We love this crap. Besides that, you know, maybe a little bit of Yakuza spiritual successor stuff going on. Yeah, just a little bit of everything. But with all that being said, of course, we're going to go ahead and dip into what we've been doing for the little bit of time we've been off. And I think we're going to go ahead and get Mr. Brian started off with that.
Thank you, Samuel. Yeah, so this weekend I went to PAX West, which is here in Seattle. So that was, it's been a lot of fun. I went to a few panels, spent about as much time as I could stomach on the main show floor, which is where all the big spectacle is. Got to see Sega's booth, which was fun. But, you know, at some point, I think all of the overwhelming marketing displays kind of take a toll. So it was fun to retreat and to see some really fantastic panels along the way. But it was pretty overall very happy with my experience there. And then, yeah, I did get to play a bit of Team Sonic Racing, the new kart racer developed by Sumo Digital that will be coming out soon. I'm not quite sure when that's supposed to be out. And I know, Patrick, you also played it, and we can probably talk about it a bit later.
Yeah, definitely.
How about you, Mike? What's new with you?
Oh, well, hi. Cheers to let me on the podcast today. Nice to be here. So I've been collecting some more Dreamcast games recently. It's my main thing. So I've got about 9 games to go now for a full set. So that's been my month, really.
And we're saying full set as in one country, or a full set as in every single game in every region?
One version of every game released for Dreamcast.
You have really got some freaking dedication, man. That's all I got to say about that.
And I thought I loved the Dreamcast.
Dedication or problems, I'm not sure which.
And no, it's definitely dedication.
Does that include a lot of like the obscure demo discs and other things that came out in random places?
Yeah, so I've got a fair amount of I started doing trial discs quite recently, so I got quite a few of them. I've got a couple of GD1 betas as well, and a system disc too. So, to be honest with you, I've completed most of the stuff I wanted, and so it's just getting any random bits and pieces I can find, regional variants and stuff like that. I don't buy any other consoles, any other retro consoles. So, I sold my large retro collection a few years ago. So, it's just something to occupy my time, really.
Wow. I also just want to take a moment to for anybody listening who's not aware, Mike, you had recently created or finished writing or iterating, I don't know how long you've been working on it, but the A to Z guide of Dreamcast games. Would you want to talk about that a bit?
Yeah, sure. So the A to Z, it came out, it's a PDF, a free PDF download. It's 506 pages long. Basically, it goes through every single Dreamcast game on any region, including indie games, with a review and some information. There's some collecting guides in the back of the guide as well. It's sort of the evolution after the Dreamcast Junkyard collector's guide we released a few years ago, which caused a bit of a storm within Sega, as it were, with our cease and desist letter from Sega Europe. So it was sort of the next evolution, which was the original was just a list, basically, in a book form. This is a more detailed guide, working on it for about 8 years. And again, that just started as me trying to document my collection. So I thought, well, I'm going to go a bit more detail. And then ended up in a quite a large book project.
Nice. Wow.
Now, before you kill off on that, Mike, what I wanted to ask you is about the cease and desist. Can you elaborate on what kind of happened there, or is that kind of not really supposed to talk about?
Oh, yeah, I'll talk about it. we printed, I think we printed 200 copies of the guide originally, and sold them. No issue at all. Sega Europe's PR guy on the YouTube channel even promoted it for us. So we had, you know, a fair bit of interest from it. And then we reprinted, before that, we got a letter from Sega Europe, or Tom, the founder of the Junkyard, Dreamcast Junkyard, that is, got a letter from Sega pretty much out of the blue, stating that we could not sell it anymore. For no real reason. They, as cease and desist letters, don't necessarily go into a massive amount of detail. It just literally said, as the rights owners of Dreamcast properties, we are asking you to stop selling it. So we printed another version with a 100% unofficial over everything, so it would make it quite clear that it was not an official product. And we got another email from Sega stating that no, that still wasn't good enough and we had to stop selling it. We're quite good friends with the editor of Retro Gamer magazine in the UK. So I think he was pointing Tom in the direction of, look, you know, they can't do anything about it at all. Nothing you've done is illegal, as it were. But I think we didn't really want to have a prolonged fight with Sega, because after all, we're only here because we love Sega. So I think we dropped out maybe a little bit earlier than we should have done, and we should have maybe took it on a bit more. But that's basically what happened.
Yeah, I know. I know Sega Europe is actually really, really cease and desist heavy. I remember around 2006, I think they sent a cease and desist to. You guys ever hear of the site YTMND?
Yes.
They sent a cease and desist because of the Sonic Says meme. So basically, in the original Sonic the Hedgehog cartoon, there's a scene where it's like, "Hey kids," well, Sonic comes like, "Hey kids, you don't. If you see a stranger, you don't need to go with them," or something of that nature. And they were sending cease and desist to all these YTMND pages and threatened litigious lawsuits for just having that. So I think Sega of Europe specifically has a heavy issue with Sonic IP and just IP in general and sending those cease and desist. So they never ended up doing anything with it, so that might have just been the case with you guys. But yeah, I love the guide personally. I actually was able to manage to get one when you first had it announced. And it's sitting on my shelf right now next to my Dreamcast collection because it's just that good.
Excellent.
Yeah, it is fantastic. I mean, I love just the wealth of things I've learned just by kind of going through and seeing information that you have about all of the different versions and where, you know, what territories each game was released in. And then you also like went through and wrote little reviews for each one too. And so that, yeah, I just think the painstaking detail of that was just really admirable. And also now you have released it to the wider community in PDF form. Is that correct?
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to peruse through the A to Z guide, you should, because it's awesome. And I think you have links to it just on the Dreamcast Junkyard website and the Facebook community page as well, right?
That's right, yeah. So it's a pinned post on the Dreamcast Junkyard group. It's also on the Dreamcast Junkyard website itself, on the top bar.
Ah, fantastic. So, Nuno, what's new with you?
Well, nothing. On the last podcast, I mentioned how I was hoping to work on a couple of videos for the Saturn Junkyard YouTube channel, particularly for my Tech Battle series. And I really thought I could finish at least one of those during August. But I just ended up having the most crazy month that I could have. And I just never got enough time to finish or even to make significant progress. I did end up working a bit on one of the videos, the one that I planned on finishing first. I recorded more footage. I have almost all of the footage that I need right now, or at least a really large portion of the footage that I need. and I started working on the script, but that's just in total, that must be like 15% of the total work on the video. So I still have to record a bit more footage, finish the script, which right now I have really just a small draft of a portion of everything that I want to talk about. And then I have to do to record voice and do the actual video editing. And so I'm just way behind, but I want to do a good video and I want to make the best video that I can about this subject. So I'm not going to rush it as much as I would like to do something for the YouTube channel, which has been sitting idly for a while. I'm not going to rush it. I'm going to take my time as long as it takes. I can't make any estimations about when it's going to be ready. Hopefully still this year, but I don't know. I don't even know about that, the way that things are going. But yeah, I'm not going to rush it, and I'm trying, I'll try to do a good job with it. I think in the end, it's for the best that I take my time and do a better job with it. Other than that, in terms of gaming, not much Saturn gaming, other than capturing that footage for that video. I've been playing some Ys. It's a really old series, and it's kind of a niche series, although I think it's gotten a bit more mainstream in the last years. I specifically played Ys Memories of Celceta, which just came out on PC, I think, beginning of the last month. It's a port of a PS Vita game that came out, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago or more. I'm not really sure. And now it came out on PC. It's actually a remake of Ys 4, which originally came out on the Super Nintendo. And yeah, I had a blast with it. It's definitely it plays in the style of the newer Ys games like Ys 7. And it's really cool game. In fact, I liked it so much that when I beat it, I was still in the mood for a bit more of that series. And I remember that I had Ys Origin on Steam, which I hadn't played before, even though I bought it on a sale like 5 years ago or something. And that one kind of stands out from the series. It originally came out on the PC. Even though most games are on the PC, they are usually ports. This one was developed exclusively for the PC. And I think the first port that it got outside of the PC is a PS4 version that came out, I don't know, maybe this year or last year. So it came out on the PC. It was an exclusive for a long time. It's also a prequel, hence why it's called Origin. And you don't play with Adol, which is the main character in all these games, this time because it's a prequel and it's set a long time before the first Ys game. You have other characters. You actually have a choice of characters, and you're encouraged to re-game with all characters, which is not something that I did. I mean, one playthrough was enough. I actually didn't like that one that much because it's a dungeon crawler. There's no overworld map. It's just an endless dungeon, and I'm not really into that. And it also gets really grindy halfway through, which I didn't like either. But overall, it was an enjoyable experience. But Memories of Celceta, that's where it's at. If you're into Ys, that one is a really good game.
Actually, Memories of Celceta, I do have that on Vita, I think. And that may be the only Ys game that I actually own. But I do want to, I kind of started it and played for an hour or so. And I really do want to go back to it. But I feel like it was the kind of game that's just going to demand a good chunk of time to get through. But yeah, it seemed like it was pretty fun.
Yeah, I beat it in a little over 20 hours, which for an action RPG, well, there are shorter games, but there are also longer games. So yeah, that's what you can expect, 20-something hours. It's definitely a series that's not for everyone. It's made by a smallish studio. Falcom never grew that much as a studio. So it may have kind of it may seem like a budget title to a point. But it has a specific style that no other action RPG really does things the same way that Ys games do. So if you can get into it, if you really find yourself enjoying it, it's really a fun game, but it's not really for everybody. So yeah, try giving it a try.
Roger that.
Will do.
So what you got, Patrick?
All right. Well, just last night, the Shiro's recorded our 1 year anniversary podcast for Sega Saturn Shiro. So we covered a really mega awesome topic. So expect to be seeing that next week sometime. But personal wise, I recently picked up the PS4 Pro, the 500 million edition. So that was pretty cool. I got my hands on that and been trying to and playing some of my friends' games. My roommate had a PS4. He had a regular one, and he has a bunch of games that he's just not playing right now. So I played a little bit of Horizon Zero Dawn, and that was amazing. Not gonna lie, that and Persona 5.
That game is so underrated. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that one, Persona 5, to plug Sega to stay on topic a little bit. So, I guess pickup wise, I've got a couple new Dreamcast games. I got Seaman, D2, and King of Fighters 99 Dream Match as a big SNK head, as Sam might be well aware of.
Very much so, very much so.
Yeah. I got that, and I picked up the Neo Geo Mini, so that was, speaking of SNK, so that was pretty interesting. Sometimes if I'm editing or I'm kind of bored, I'll play it a little bit and then continue on. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. It's one of those turn on, play a little bit, and you even plug into the USB on your computer, so it's definitely worth it if you guys want to pick up the international version or even want to import the Japanese version too. But besides that, that's really about it.
What about you, Sam?
Well, I had been, if anyone has been keeping up with my YouTube channel, it's been pretty much dark for the past 2 months. And there's a couple of reasons behind that. A couple of people in this room actually know what's going on with that. To make it brief, the channel's going through a soft reboot of sorts. So I've been working on that. I had been working on that, and I had been playing some games. I'd actually been playing a good little bit of Saturn until my RGB cable went out, and I had to go back to playing via composite, which absolutely sucks. In fact, I did a live stream last week of Alien Trilogy, and yeah, I kind of wish it had been in RGB, but it still looked good. But everything...
Composite, fate worse than death.
I know, right? But... Oh, and before I get to the butt, let me say this for my buddy Dave, Sega Saturn Shiro. He loves this series, I believe, just as much as I do. I finally managed to complete the franchise of Siberia. I actually have Siberia 3 on the PS4 now, so I'm planning on looking at that entire series in the future for the channel, because I absolutely, it's a point-and-click adventure, but it's not a point-and-click adventure, and I absolutely loved growing up with those games, like Myst, and it just... Everything, Fandango, all those games, just I loved that during that era. But to get to the butt, some of y'all might know I'm a mechanic, and just yesterday, in fact, I spent a little bit of time in the emergency room because I pretty much filleted my index finger on my right hand wide open. So my gaming and editing for the moment is going to have to take a break. In fact, it's very irritating right now having this splint in my fingers wrapped up in about 2 inches worth of gauze and everything, but hopefully things will get sorted out soon enough. It doesn't look like there's any nerve damage or anything, so we should be good to go for the most part, except I keep pointing, so either I can make a gun or I can say I'm number one, or you know, I kind of got this little hole, you know, I am one thing, and I can point at everybody, but it's okay.
Besides, another finger would be like peace and love, man. Peace and love.
Nah, dude. I'm gonna do my pinky finger and just, you know, rock on all the time. Rock on all the time, dude. But besides that, there hasn't really been a lot going on. I have been playing the hell out of the Shenmue remaster. I had gotten up to Kowloon on Shenmue 2, and because I kind of sped run Shenmue 1. I didn't speed run it per se, but I knew exactly what to do. In fact, my wife was looking at me the whole time like, why do you know to look in there? Why do you know to talk to this person? Why are you know? Because she's heard about Shenmue, but you know, she's always heard what a lot of people have. It's really slow paced, whatever you want to call it. But for people like me who play it every single year, I pretty much know what to do in the first 2 hours of gameplay, just intuitively. Like, but I'd gotten up to about Kowloon, had to take a break for a couple of days, and at this rate, I might have to take a break for a couple more days, because it kind of sucks, because, you know, yeah, I can use my thumb, and yeah, I can hold the controller, but shoulder buttons are an issue, and I can't really move my right hand very, very quickly or stress it, because it just, like, pulls everything in that finger, but it'll be all right. Life goes on. But yeah, that's about it for me, man.
I mean, I guess the good news is that you can, you know, the games give you an option to switch the shoulder buttons, right? So you can run with the left trigger instead, I guess.
Yeah.
If it's any consolation.
Yeah.
I got to imagine, you know, a lot of people in the community and among us have been playing Shenmue 1 and 2 HD recently. I know I have as well, although I'm kind of the opposite where I've really drilled down in Shenmue 1 and have been really kind of trying to savor that a bit. And then I actually completed it yesterday, and now I'm on to Shenmue 2. Who else is playing those right now?
Yeah, I really want to play them, but I actually want to play them on the Dreamcast, but my Shenmue 1 disc, as Sam probably knows, is just so messed up, and I think his is the same way, where it'll freeze randomly or it will just lock up.
Well, you know, not to stop you, Pat, but I mean, this is an issue that a lot of people, especially, I'm not sure about the PAL regions or about the Japanese disc, but in America, it seems like that first run of Shenmue had so many issues with the pressing of disc 1 and disc 3. Those two discs are synonymous with having issues, whether it be, and it isn't even, it's not disc rot per se, it's just the, whenever they were pressing those discs, you know, everybody thinks that CD media is going to last forever. Well, on paper, if you do it exactly to this specification and keep it in these conditions, yeah, but you've got multiple different factories that were pressing the games differently. You've got different, you know, weather conditions. Like, you live out in a very dry climate. I live in a very humid climate. They're both very hot, but those two things interact very differently. And that's not even to talk about if you buy a used copy from somebody on eBay or whatever the case might be. But I've actually had to buy Shenmue 1 three different times to have a functioning disc 1. That's because I'm not going to burn the game, because it requires effectively an entire gigabyte disc, and I don't like compression artifacts and all the rest of that crap. But to kind of get to what Patrick said on, I would rather play it on the Dreamcast. In all honesty, once Sega has got the bugs fixed to where the game doesn't have these, I haven't experienced any game breaking issues yet. I've only had a couple of audio issues, and there was one or two issues where a couple of Excite QTE in UArcade gave me a couple of issues to where I couldn't actually play the game at all. It just like threw multiple button presses at me at once, and no matter what I did, I couldn't get it right. But besides that, I honestly believe that the remaster is the way that people should play it now, because it's a lot more, it's easier to get into, load times are a lot quicker, it looks nicer. It's just a better package, and I think that the DC version is basically going to be relegated to a collector's point or people who just don't partake in modern gaming.
Yep, I agree with that. It's as the resident Dreamcast what word do you use to describe it? Obsessive. I'm playing through Shenmue 1 and 2 on the Xbox One at the current time, and it does a lot of the problems you've got the DC versions fixed in terms of, you know, the load times. The control seems a little bit better. There's a couple of bugs, and the audio is definitely, you know, of its time. But I think I'm a Dreamcast fan, but I think also I'm a massive Shenmue fan, and I think to see so many people who've never experienced the series now speaking about it and actually enjoying it, I think that's the ultimate thing. If the Dreamcast version is relegated to a collector's piece, then that's fine with me.
Yeah, that's one thing I'm really excited to see, is to what extent Shenmue might continue to carve a niche among, you know, a new generation of players, particularly now that I think the gaming medium has become so fragmented, where now we have these subgenres that really play to a lot of the more plotting sensibilities that Shenmue appealed to, such as like walking simulators and a lot of the indie space and games that focus more on exploration and kind of set that expectation a little more, that it doesn't always have to be about rushing through or having, you know, the quickest reflexes or just the most kinetic combat or anything. You know, there is a space now that is firmly established where these games can exist and thrive. And I'm really excited to see how Shenmue fits into that space.
Well, to kind of, go ahead, Mike.
So I was going to say, I said the same thing on the DreamPod in the last episode. Shenmue's been, a lot of people will say Shenmue's an open world simulator. Like, you know, people go into it expecting Red Dead Redemption or GTA. And I think it's not. It's a lot more like a cross between a sort of a old style point and click adventure and a sort of a life simulator, which also very popular in Japan. And I think it's a very different kind of game, but I think Brian's right. The scene now is set where, especially with Yakuza, which although is a very different game, it's got the same sort of, you know, mix of genres, very strong Japanese stylings to it. I think it's the perfect time for Shenmue to be appreciated. I think if it came out in the 360 time frame, if it came out 10 years ago, I don't know whether it would have been as well received as it has been.
Well, what I was going to say is that I agree entirely with what y'all are getting at. And I think a lot of the criticisms of Shenmue and the reason a lot of people don't like it is because it's not a traditional Western game. It's not a traditional open world game. It's not GTA. It's not Red Dead Redemption. It's not action packed. It doesn't have waypoints that show you where to go. And in a lot of regards, I've always considered it a life simulator. My buddy, AJ from Mastercast TV, he's described it perfectly. It is a revenge story that is a detective narrative. I mean, that's what it is. You're not supposed to go up in there thinking you can interact with every single thing and every single person and, you know, go, you know, ham on people and drive tanks around and, you know, pick up hookers or whatever the case it might be. It's really about filling the shoes of a teenage boy trying to find out who killed his father. That's the story. And unless you can appreciate that, unless you can go into there understanding, you know, a lot of people get irritated because the long wait times. Well, if you actually follow your journal, if you actually go through it properly and you can figure out the clues, I mean, a lot of people get hung up on I think people just get hung up at the point where you got to find the sailors. And that's why that's such a big thing, because people just give up on the game at that point. I mean, all you got to do is go over to the freaking tarot card girl. You just go over to her and ask her to give you a clue, and it'll tell you exactly what to do. I mean, like, nobody ever goes in that building, apparently, because I said something the other day up on the DC Junkyards Facebook group, and I'm like, because the dude's just stuck. And I'm like, hey, man, just go over to the fortune teller. Just go over to the fortune teller and give her a little bit of yen, and she'll tell you exactly what to do. I mean, it's so simple. And if you time things out, you'll really not have a lot of time to kill. I mean, the fastest I've ever beat the game, I think, was like in 20 in-game days. I mean, you can beat the game stupid fast if you really want to. In fact, if you just hang around and goof off all the time and take your sweet, you know, your sweet ass time, you'll get the worst ending possible. You know, Londi's going to come back, kick your ass again, and take the damn mirror. I mean, it's like there is a way to fail the game.
Yeah, I am kind of conflicted. You know, I've been playing this game for pretty much since it came out, all week. As we're recording this, it's been out for a little bit over a week now. I think it has the potential to resonate with people in very different ways for very different reasons. You know, for me, it's not a game that I'm going to play to just enjoy the story. Because honestly, or at least in my interpretation in 2018, it's just not that good on that front. But what it is really good at, aside from the world building and just having an attention to detail and really intentional, the way it really sets the scene with all of these details that flesh out a community that feels real, that feels like it can exist with or without Rio. I really appreciate that it's a game that just has such charm in its ambition. And even though it didn't necessarily succeed in all of the ways it set out to, there are a lot of common criticisms, particularly now over the controls and even the sound with the compression of the voices, or at least the English voices, and even the visuals by 2018 standards and all of these things that I think would, you know, garner, and maybe rightfully so, a fair amount of criticism across players who are newer to the game. It retains that charm, and just having attempted so much that I, you know, really respect and have to just kind of take a moment to just stop, not worry about trying to get to the next plot point, just think through and process like what the game's trying to do. And part of that is the fun in that is his taking a perspective that may be a little more critical than when I had played this, you know, as when I was younger. And I think I've really enjoyed it because it has encouraged me to kind of fill in the gaps with some of the game's logic and try to assess like, oh, what are other things that could be going on in this world? You know, what's Ryo's actual relationship with his father? Like, you know, what are these people actually like doing? Because the game kind of gives you a little bit of context, but maybe not enough to make it super explicit. So it's kind of fun to really critically assess what it's doing and fill in those gaps with your imagination.
Well, I've been playing a bit of Shenmue HD as well. In fact, I just played a bit today. And I haven't got really far yet. I'm starting with the first one, which is the one that I like the most. Two is a pretty cool game as well. But I just prefer the smaller, more, I would say, intimate setting of the first game more. And, I'm not going to talk too much about it. But just speaking about the HD release, the last time that I tried to play Shenmue, I tried to emulate it just to give it some variety to my experience, to not play it on the Dreamcast yet again, and maybe trying to improve the graphics a bit. So I tried to play it mostly on the Emule, which I think is the overall best Dreamcast emulator, although there is no perfect solution right now. Each emulator has its pros and cons. But I ran into a lot of problems. I couldn't get the widescreen hack to work correctly. I mean, actually, I got it to work as good as I could, but it just wasn't good enough because the game is so graphically intensive that it's constantly culling objects outside of the original 4x3 area. So you can try to force play in widescreen, but you're going to have constant pop-up of objects because they're just not being rendered internally. And I ran into problems running at a higher resolution. The emulator was stupidly demanding with this game in particular. So if I activated VSync, I got constant slowdown. If I didn't activate VSync, I got constant screen tearing. So it was just a nightmare. I quit it. I didn't even play it that much. I just quit it immediately because it was an awful experience. And now I have this HD remake, which does all of that. It gives me arbitrary resolutions. It gives me widescreen support, good widescreen support. It even cleans up some textures, I think, and also introduces some new effects, although I'm not really a fan of Bloom, so I turned that off. But yeah, I went to so much trouble trying to play Shenmue in HD, which a lot of times in a lot of emulators works beautifully. In this case, it worked terribly. And now Sega gave me what I wanted, which was a way to play Shenmue with modern conveniences like these, like higher resolutions and widescreen, widescreen aspect ratio. So I do agree that the HD re-releases kind of make the original Saturn, but I mean Dreamcast version obsolete in the sense that it's just there's nothing that the Dreamcast version does better than the HD versions. You can criticize the HD versions for not improving the games as much as some people were expecting, but there's nothing that the HD version really does worse. And if you want, you can even try to emulate the original look. You can turn down resolution and play in 4x3 and
yeah,
the stuff like that. So there's really no good reason to play Dreamcast version other than wanting the original experience, because some people do value that, playing the original with the original disc, original console on a TV from the time. People value that, and that's fine, to each their own. But if you just want to play the game, like, the HD version is the definitive version. And I think a game of this caliber, a game that has had such an impact on the industry and has so many fans and has left such a legacy, really deserved this kind of treatment in a time when every game or a lot of games get remakes and remasters and re-releases. There was really no good reason for Shenmue not to have an HD version, and Sega finally did that, probably just because of Shenmue 3. I don't really think they would have bothered otherwise if they couldn't cash in on the success or the hype for Shenmue 3, but doesn't matter. It's here and it's awesome, and thank goodness it happened, because it was really something that the industry needed, and a convenient modern way to play Shenmue.
And that speaks also to the preservation aspect of this, and I would argue maybe the Dreamcast as a whole, because, you know, as Sam mentioned, with all of the pressing issues and people have been having with their discs 1 and 3 failing, I mean, you know, Shenmue is not a game that's going to last forever in a physical original, you know, its original Dreamcast form. And so the more that games like this can exist beyond the Dreamcast, in a way, not only opens it up to, you know, new generations and future generations of people who can play it, also preserves our ability to enjoy it, at least legally, and shows that Sega is willing to embrace the community, and I'm encouraged that, you know, for what this might mean for future Dreamcast releases to follow in the same fashion. I think in a way, even though it's, you know, ditching the original hardware, on some level, it's still preserving that the brand and spirit of the types of experiences the Dreamcast offered.
One thing I want to chime in on, and this isn't going to get me fans by any means, but I know a lot of people in the community agree with it. I thoroughly enjoy and appreciate the fact that Sega brought this IP back. And anyone who knows anything about the situation, if it hadn't been for the 2015 Kickstarter of Shenmue 3, this probably wouldn't have happened. But my issue with it is that even though I really enjoy this port, it is a rushed port, okay? It is not the game that they should have ironed out these details before it came out, because it has had a number of issues, game-breaking issues. I can't remember which one from GameSack. He has been all over Twitter and he absolutely loves the game. And it's been insane. The community has really just shown its true colors, and people who are just like defending this game as absolutely perfect whenever there's visual proof that the game is not perfect. I think we need to take nostalgia glasses off and understand that, yes, the game is dated. Yes, the story, this is a 3 gigabyte game. It's not going to be to the same quality as open world games of today. But more importantly, I really wish that Sega had done a remake, not a simple, and this isn't even a remaster, it's a port. It's something in between a remaster and a port, but it's not even a full remaster. And I really wish that Sega had spent the time and actually done something with this IP besides just porting the Dreamcast code over. I really wish they had. Now, I mean, you've got most of the original actors, voice actors, would have easily been on board with it. And I can understand from a financial point of view, it might not have been, I mean, I don't know what the sales figures are for the game so far, but I mean, it's Shenmue. It probably wasn't selling 10, 15 million copies. I mean, if it did sell 10, 15 million copies, that's absolutely awesome. I haven't actually looked to see what the sales are at this moment. But I mean, still, the original game, and the original game didn't cost $112 million or whatever the hell number people are throwing around. Freaking Adam Corley did an awesome video explaining why that number is so wrong. But, you know, still to that point, I really wish Sega had done more with it. And the one thing that's good about the whole situation, the greatest thing about it, and Nuno will probably be able to appreciate it the most because he like me, is mostly a PC gamer at this point. The PC modding community is full-blown out the gate making mods for this game. Different lighting situations, different textures. I mean, they are doing everything in their power to make this game more than what it is, just like they have with it on emulation. I mean, no matter what the case is, the PC community has, I'm not a PC Master Race guy by any means, but they have shown their stuff and they are doing their best to make this game what fans really wanted from this, at least in my opinion.
That's pretty amazing. And the fact that you could probably even play with a Dreamcast controller is even cooler on a PC. So it might make me want to go PC for that instead of PS4.
There's already a mod for an HD jacket with a high-resolution Tiger, so there's that.
Wow.
Dude, the lighting effects, the nighttime lighting effects, they've got the lights from inside the houses. There's that ambient, that freaking sun glow or whatever you want to call it, God rays, whatever the hell the name people like to call it nowadays. But it's just some of the pictures I've seen from the actual HD work that the modding community is doing. It's amazing, dude. It makes the game feel like a modern day game, minus the audio, of course.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. Yeah, I wish I had the PC version, and probably eventually I will. And by then, maybe there'll be a lot of that community will have really pushed tons of mods beyond, not only just the aesthetic or visual changes, but make some fundamental, just some crazy stuff in that game that would be kind of amusing to see. But I'm also kind of curious, and this is a little bit pivoting slightly. I don't know, have any of you been playing Yakuza? I know Kiwami 2, the remake of Yakuza 2 came out recently, and other things. And I'm kind of wondering to what extent, some fans might try to incorporate some of the quality of life or other innovations that the Yakuza franchise has been doing into the PC version of Shenmue.
I've picked up Yakuza Kiwami 2 on Friday when it was released, or Tuesday when it was released. I haven't actually played Yakuza games all the way through. I've just picked up Yakuza 0 as well today. Even though I've got like 4 at the current time, and I've had the PS3 versions, and I had the PS3 versions, I've never actually played that much of them. I'm not quite sure why. But I'm playing through them at the current time, and it's amazing what Sega have done to completely redo the game. And I think this goes back a little bit to the last comments, but I do wish they'd done the same with Shenmue. I know it's not as big a series financially for them, probably. Shenmue, that is. I think Yakuza's probably a bigger series for them now. But, the detail is just astonishing on Yakuza.
I just always find it funny that they always say that nobody has any interest in Shenmue-like games, but they have like a Shenmue-like game they've been supporting forever, and there's a bajillion games for it. But from what I've heard from people, I mean, I really want to get into Yakuza, and I actually picked up the first one at Game On Expo from, I don't know if you guys know who Ian Ferguson is from the CU podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
He sold me a copy of that, and I'm really excited to start playing the Yakuza series, because I know it's just like Shenmue in a way. I mean, not quite, but it has that same vibe to it. So I'm really
there's a few fundamental differences. Yeah, definitely, it's a series worth getting into. Those games are so good. Which did you say you picked up the first one, as in like Kiwami 1 or 0, the prequel?
No, I picked up the first one on the PS2. They did reprint of it. I think couple of years ago, and he was selling it for $20, so I just picked it up.
Yeah, it's a fantastic game. I still haven't played. I just got my Kiwami 2 in the mail, so I haven't played it yet, but I'm really looking forward to it. And maybe Mike, you can speak to it a little more. I think it uses the same upgraded engine that 6 used.
Yeah, it looks like it. Yeah, it's I haven't played a huge amount of it. I've mainly playing with the wife and playing through all the multiplayer versus games on all the Yakuzas yesterday. But no, the engine's it's astonishing looking. I think to touch on what Patrick said, I think Yakuza is what Shenmue would have probably turned into if it had kept going after 2, in terms of the engine and sort of the gameplay. That's sort of not quite fully open world, but sort of it's a very difficult game to explain. Yakuza, I think a lot of people get into Yakuza, especially amongst the Shenmue community, thinking it's going to be Shenmue, and it's really not. It's a very different game.
That's what I was gonna say. I mean, like, everybody always praises Yakuza, and I personally kind of enjoy the games. I've enjoyed the remakes of sorts a lot more so than I did the originals. Maybe it's just because of the graphical fidelity, or I don't know. But it does feel like the combat mechanics a little bit better. But for me, it kind of just feels like, you know, let's make a GTA version of Shenmue. It's kind of what it feels like. And I'm personally not the biggest fan of GTA. I haven't been a big fan of GTA since like San Andreas. The newer GTAs, especially, there's a point where open world becomes too large and has too much, and there's no focus to the gameplay. And if I'm going to play something that has no focus, where it's just literally you make your own story, I'm much more inclined to play something like DayZ or the newly released Scum, you know, an open world game like that where it's PvP, PvE. I very much enjoy those games, but the whole open world, do whatever you want, whenever you want, and there's absolutely... that there's not really any guiding fact. There's no end. I'm just not really a big fan of those games. And that's not to say that that's what Yakuza is. It feels like Sega's going in that direction because from a marketing standpoint, it probably is a good decision. I mean, those are some of the best selling games right now.
Go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
I'm just gonna defend Grand Theft Auto for a minute because of the massive
band.
GTA 5 was the greatest game ever made. It's got an incredible story, but I think outside the story, I agree it is very much sort of the online GTA Online. I've never got into. I don't really like GTA Online. But I think the story wise, I always look at them a little bit like cinema to an extent. Yakuza and Shenmue sort of appeal to me in the same way as Japanese cinema does. And the same with Resident Evil to an extent appeals to me in the same way as Japanese horror films do. They're culturally different, and I think they are. You know, playing Yakuza is like watching a really good Japanese Yakuza themed film, sort of a crime film. And I think GTA is a lot more like a Hollywood film, and I think that's the difference between them. I think sometimes with Sega going with Yakuza, I think they try to go more towards that sort of Hollywood style epic feeling, whereas Shenmue especially is very much like a Japanese cinema film. It's a, you know, I think the revenge story is, I think every single Japanese film I've seen that hasn't been a horror film has had revenge in it at some point.
I can totally agree with you, Mike. I mean, I thoroughly enjoy the story from both of those respective franchises. I very much enjoy Red Dead Redemption, but what do you do after you've beaten this story? That's kind of my issue, because it becomes nothing more than me running around, killing the same people, trying to find side quests, make a little bit more money, buy something, repeat. And you know, it's completely hypocritical of me because I play games like PUBG where literally you just drop into a map and do the exact same thing every single time.
Yeah.
But there's an end goal in those kind of situations. There is an end to this, and then we restart. We go again. Whereas massively open world games like GTA just feel like there's no end to it. And I personally can't get into that.
I think it's for me, I play a lot of Football Manager, which is a massive sports management game in the UK. And that's very open-ended in terms of the fact you sort of make your own story. And I'm also a big fan of turn-based strategy games. And so, like, the Civ series has always been one of my favorite games. And I think, for me, I like that ability to be open-ended. When I was playing games growing up, the thought of having a whole different world and just doing whatever you want to in there was appealing to me. But I can see how other people wouldn't like that. I don't like really rigid games. I get a little bit bored. I finished.
I mean, I also want to take a step back and really draw a distinction between what the goals of Yakuza and Shenmue for that matter, but mostly Yakuza were versus what a game that is open world like GTA or like really open world or games that even are more immersive sim that have multiple systems that interact with each other that really help build out that idea of emergent storytelling where, you know, you're not, every situation is going to be, there's some element of randomness that's going to play out very differently each time you approach it. And I feel like Yakuza is really more, does less to be like those kinds of experiences and more to be almost like a traditional JRPG in a lot of ways. I honestly don't think it is an open world game. I mean, it has, you can do whatever you want, you know, in this confined space, but I never got the impression that it was striving to be just this vast, expansive space that you could, you know, treat as your sandbox, because you really didn't have that kind of influence over the world. You couldn't attack people randomly. You know, you had your kind of random battles that you would, your fights that you would get in, and so it, you know, for a long time it very clearly separated the mechanics of battle or fighting from your exploration and other aspects of it, very much in a traditional RPG structure. I feel like Sega in many ways dropped the ball back when the original Yakuza came out, because they did try to play up that, you know, it might be a big Hollywood experience, much in the way you were alluding to, Sam, even to the point of getting like Mark Hamill and all these other actors to do the voice work for the English version of the game, and they really tried to play into that. Oh yeah, this is kind of that GTA experience, when I don't think that was ever the developer's intention. And I think that represents a huge disconnect between Sega's marketing arm at the time, or at least at least for the Western audiences. And I think that may be a reason why it took so long for it to gain traction here, because they just mismarketed it. They really misrepresented what it was attempting to do. Whereas now that people are kind of understanding what Yakuza is and what makes it unique, it really is gaining that audience in its own, you know, on its own terms.
Let me just add something about comparisons between Yakuza and Shenmue, because when I first played it, I only played the first Yakuza on the original version on PlayStation 2, like a long time ago. And at the time, the game already had this reputation of being kind of like Shenmue. And I played it with that mindset because I really liked Shenmue at the time. I had already beaten Shenmue 1 and 2. I had not played them at launch. I played them later on, but I had already played them by this time when I first tried Yakuza. And so I went in expecting something really close to Shenmue. And that's not what I got at all. And it's not the fault of the game, because the game does what it does, but it's the expectations, I think, completely ruined my experience, because I went in expecting a particular thing, and I didn't found it. And because of that, I couldn't adjust to the game and see the strong points of the game, you know, and play the game for what it is, instead of playing it for what I had hoped it to be. And so I didn't like it at all. I wouldn't say at all, but I didn't like it much back then. I ended up finishing it more out of just stubbornness or something. Back then I was really, whenever I started a game, I would make it a point to beat it, even when I wasn't enjoying it much. But yeah, overall, it was just a bad experience for me at the time. And I completely wrote off the whole series. I never played a Yakuza again. And I kept hearing about these games throughout the years, because the series is as popular as ever and there's a lot of games already. And I actually want to give it another chance now that it finally got on the PC. There was a release of Yakuza 0, which is the prequel. Story-wise, I think it's the first game, hence why they called it 0. So they finally released Yakuza 0 on PC and are going to release. I don't think it came out already, but I think it's going to come out until the end of the year. Yakuza Kiwami, which is the remake of the first one. And then hopefully if the series attracts enough attention, I believe it makes sense to release every other Yakuza game on the PC. So I want to give Yakuza 0 a try. I haven't played it yet, but I want to give it another try and try to play it and look at it for what it is and not what I hoped it would be, which is what happened last time, and it ruined my experience. So whenever people still say this to this day. People still say that Yakuza is kind of like Shenmue. And I do admit that there are some similarities. But I think the similarities are so tenuous, are so subtle, and so small in the grand scheme of things that I think it does more harm than good to the game, as at least if other people get the bad experience that I did. I think it really doesn't do Yakuza much good to keep comparing it to Shenmue, because they're really different games. They offer different experiences, and each game does its own thing, and you must be into that particular thing that each game does well, and not expect both to be kind of two sides of the same coin, because they're really two different coins, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly when I'm thinking about, you know, the verbs that you use to interact in those games. You know, with Shenmue, everything is very much more grounded to the narrative and the world that's, you know, it's trying to depict, you know, a 80s Japan as it was, and not embellish a lot of the over top sensibilities, especially in like the beat 'em up structure and other things that Yakuza really just went over the top with. You can't just curb stomp random strangers who want money from you, right? Like even when you get into brawls in Shenmue, you're, you know, relatively civil. You're not leaving people in a state where they probably need to go to a hospital at the very least. And so, you know, even just the way that you interact is kind of muted to an extent. You know, you can interact with every object, but you can't steal shit. You know, you can knock on every door, but you can't just barge into people's homes. And I think, you know, that's definitely something that makes Shenmue a little bit more of a niche in a lot of ways, because for the longest time, players were used to being able to do those things. And it's why it makes it an unfair comparison, I think, to try to build that as an experience that's akin to either GTA or Yakuza, which are both very exaggerated by comparison. I guess with that, you know, more broadly, Sega's kind of been on a roll lately, I gotta say. I mean, they're coming out with all sorts of games. You know, of course, the Yakuza game, they're doing, what, about two a year right now? Including, you know, a mainline entry and then the remakes now. Obviously, Shenmue came out. We already talked about that at length. They also have... So I was also at PAX. I think I mentioned that earlier. And visiting Sega's booth, I noticed quite a few games, or at least a lot more than I usually see, that were on the show floor in playable form. And that included Valkyria Chronicles 4. They had a couple of Atlus games that I can't remember the titles offhand.
Yeah, they should have had a Persona 5 and Persona 3, the dancing games.
Right.
They had E3 when I went.
Yeah, that's right. You went to E3, Patrick. And another game that they had both at PAX this weekend, which I played a little bit of, and I believe they had it at E3 as well, was Team Sonic Racing.
Yep.
Do you have any overall thoughts on that from what you played?
I'm going to be honest, I really didn't care much for it. I was expecting something akin to Sega All-Star Racing or All-Star Racing Transformed, but it kind of seemed like a really, really bland Mario Kart. But yeah, I really didn't have a lot of fun with it, unfortunately. I played as Rouge, and her voice wasn't the best, and I didn't really care much for the mechanics of it. I mean, maybe it might have just been a beta thing and me just playing it for a couple minutes at a booth. It's one of those things you have to play a little bit and get addicted to, but in my opinion, I didn't really think it impressed me as much, unfortunately.
Yeah, I have to say, I mean, I would echo a lot of that sentiment in general. I think there were some things it did that I liked, but certainly one thing I was not prepared for was to have that much voice acting in a racing game, and not particularly good voice acting either. So I could see that getting very grating after a while. Even just in the few minutes that I played it, I heard just so many of the same phrases and voices over and over. I could see that getting a little grating to an extent.
Yeah, one other game they had there that I really enjoyed playing that they come out with was the Fist in the North Star game.
Oh yeah, tell me about that. I actually know nothing about that one.
So it's made by the same team with that worked on Yakuza and actually had a lot of the the VA is from the Yakuza series, doing the characters from Fist of the North Star, and it's a really fun beat 'em. It's like a beat 'em up S game. It's a, I guess it's like a mixture of Yakuza and a 3D beat 'em up game. So you have all these different move sets. You can have all, you have all these special moves like the, of course, the thing, and like things of that nature. Thing like just different attacks and just massively fun combo attacks, but. The game, I really enjoyed playing that at E3. The one I played was more of a storyline-based mode, so you had to fix up this car, and you had to race it in this race. Of course, I tried racing it, and I blew up immediately after trying to get this car together, because I like crashed into a wall or fell off the track or something. But the game was a lot of fun. Another one I played was the shaking game, where it's like a making martini, so you have to like shake the... I think you had to twirl the thumbsticks in a certain order. And you're making like martinis, and then the person drinks it, and then, of course, Ken's like, "You're already drunk."
That sounds. I don't know if I have words for what that seems kind of cool. Is it like, I don't know. I mean, do you get a sense that it's very, that all of those games are not games, but I mean, do you think they're like very secluded, like mini games, or do they have a thread that connects them a little bit more?
Well, it's basically like a, just like a story mode, like taking side quests or side jobs. Mm-hmm. So, for example, just like fun racing things. So, say you're trying to complete the story. I'm actually really not sure what the story is about so far. They haven't really elaborated on it, at least from what I've seen. But I guess it's just typical Fist of the North Star, Ken beating up people, you know, the usual sort of thing. But it was basically, you'd walk around and be like, hey, you want to work as a bartender at this bar? We're backed up. So you can earn experience points and get some money from it as well. So say, for example, you need to buy a certain part, you can get a job and get the money for it and go buy it. And it's a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it, even the mini side quests. I was actually pointed away from playing the story. And, oh, you might want to play the beating sections. But I was like, I want to play the story, so... I hopped on the story a little bit, and I actually had a really good time, and I'm really excited to play it. I think it comes out in about a month or so.
Yeah, I wonder what parallels they're going to kind of draw, because that's, I mean, when I think back to what Yakuza does, or what it eventually evolved into, was especially in Yakuza 5, where each character had a vastly different play style, where, you know, Kazuma was driving a taxi around, and that was like, kind of had its own crazy stuff, and then there was a whole racing circuit within that. Sorry, spoilers, everybody. Maybe that's
it's probably more late for that.
But then you get into the next section where is it Saijima? I can't remember his name, but yeah, he's like basically, you know, hunting. It's in the wilderness of so it's just like very, very different scenario. So to think of a game that treats that on a much more I don't know, a more confined level where you can really jump back and forth to all these different, vastly different play styles all the time seems like a pretty cool evolution of that formula. I'll have to look into that. I didn't really know much about Fisted in the North Star, but I'll keep a close eye on it going forward. Anything else that you guys are excited for, I guess, Sega or otherwise? I mean, or anything else you guys are keeping tabs on?
Nothing at all. The future is bleak.
I'm excited for that Persona dancing game, dude. I love rhythm games, and I love Persona, so I'll be playing the hell out of that. That's already a guaranteed pre-order.
Nice.
I was looking forward to Sonic Racing, but yeah. I think they dropped the ball quite badly, Sega, with this one. Sumo Digital Sega Racing games were amazing, and I think to have it focused just on Sonic, you know, possibly the most overused game character of all time. I love Sonic. Before anyone starts, you know, thinking I hate Sega, I the levels on Transform that were the best were the, you know, the Skies levels, the Panzer Dragoon levels. They were the best levels. To focus it all on Sonic, I don't know. It seems like a real step back for a series.
Yeah, and I gotta, just to tie this, I mean, if there's one thing this episode that we can tie back to the Sega Saturn for a second, I think Sega really did a disservice by teasing that game out, and you know, I see this sentiment in the community, but they really teased that game originally before they revealed the title and everything, with just the simple silhouette of the logo, and then a very clear R emerging from that that was very much stylized as a game that everybody unanimously loves on the Saturn Junkyard, Sonic R.
Yeah, you can speak for yourself there, brother.
I don't.
Super Sonic Racing.
That game could burn in the trash.
If there's an everlasting mark that the Saturn Junkyard left in the world, was convert more people into Sonic R.
Official Dreamcast Junkyard line is we're not fans, Sonic R.
I have no idea why y'all people love that game. I mean, it's like, Sega Lord X put out a video today and he's already been slightly converted. It's just, I mean, dude, if you like it, if you like the game, that's cool, but the game's trash.
Yeah. The music is good.
I kind of want to unpack that a little bit because I think that is yet another example of a game where the expectations, I mean, really, people just, even at the time in 98 or 97 when this game was released, you know, well, granted, the Saturn was kind of waning, so it didn't really have as much of an audience to really break through to. But I don't think Sega ever established clear expectations for what that game was trying to do. And that's a clear thread, I think, that we've seen with Shenmue, with Yakuza, with all of these games. I think there's a fundamental disconnect on, well, you know, maybe we can market this as kind of a Mario Kart type game, which it didn't strive to do, and Traveler's Tales like didn't strive to do whatsoever, when really it was doing a very unique thing and trying to be a more exploration focused, almost merging, you know, platform elements into racing, and the racing itself was purely an afterthought. In fact, you know, I'm almost hard pressed to call it a racing game because I don't feel like it fits cleanly into that genre. But I don't know. I mean, I think it comes down to expectations, and also just there were a lot of flaws. Like, it is not a perfect game. I think there are a lot of execution quirks that definitely would rub people the wrong way, understandably. But, you know, that said, at the end of the day, I really do think there was a charm in the ambition of what it tried to do to carve its own niche that even though it wasn't ultimately successful in doing that, there was just a lot about it that I found endearing that kind of encapsulates the spirit of Sega of that era, especially going into, you know, the late 90s and early 2000s, where they were willing to take those risks, even when it meant, you know, not necessarily connecting with everybody. But at the same time, we're left with all of these experiences that just did such an amazingly unique take on whatever genre that they were part of, if you can even classify them as genre or as a genre, like, you know, Seaman. And I think there was an innovation in that really required Sega to do things that were going to rub people the wrong way inherently, because that's what that ideal of, or that's what that mind frame of risk taking ultimately requires to get to that point.
See, the issue with Sonic R that I have so much, and I can appreciate everything you just said, but my issue with Sonic R, and I feel a lot of other people as well, is very similar to my issue with Panzer Dragoon Saga. It's not that the game is, well, Panzer Dragoon Saga is a good game. Sonic Racing is it's an extremely acquired taste.
Speak for yourself, Sam.
Okay, whatever. My point is that people like me went into Sonic Racing wanting a Sonic game. People like me went into Panzer Dragoon Saga wanting a Panzer Dragoon game. And we did not get that in either situation. I love the lore. I love the story of Panzer Dragoon Saga. But I do not like the combat mechanic, period. I want on rails or me on the back of my dragon fighting in real time. I don't want turn-based mechanics. And I'm an RPG guy. It's just those worlds just disconnect the same way for me as in Sonic Racing. If it was going to be a Sonic Racer, it should have just been like a top-down or overhead or side or 2.5D racer where you're using a Sonic character basically running through a platform, you know, track. That would have been an awesome game, in my opinion. what it did, though, was throw you in this giant gauntlet of extremely chopped up 3D graphics that just kind of were a jumble of a mess, and Sonic doesn't move like Sonic. It just doesn't feel right.
The tech wasn't there, was it? They didn't have...
I don't even know if the tech could have ever gotten to that point, because if you look at what Sonic Adventure did in Sonic Adventure 2, they took the same mechanic of, you know, Sonic in a 3D world, but it puts you on these positions at times. Prime example, first level of Sonic Adventure, when you're running away from the whale, Shenmue, whatever the hell you want to call it.
Shampoo.
As soon as you hit the first booster, you are in a straight line, and that is Sonic. And what it did was that you had areas that were three-dimensional, you can run around, but whenever it came to actually go time doing Sonic, it was hit the boost and go. I can remember the San Francisco, you know, whenever you're going down the hills, all those moments.
Oh, City Escape.
City, exactly. Sonic Adventure 2. That was Sonic with 3D little hub world crap going on, and that was cool. The same way that Sonic R could have done the very same thing and been cool. But to me, it's not Sonic. It's got the characters of Sonic. That's not even the music of Sonic. I personally don't care for the music because I'm not a big fan of that, you know, everybody stupid, that whole 90s style of music. Look, man, I'm a metalhead. I don't care for that crap.
Sam, I think you should sing the rest of it.
I'm not doing it. Let me go get my guitar and I will shred. How about that?
Actually, to tie it back into Dreamcast, do you know the singer that did the soundtrack for that was on Metropolis Street Racer? She did a lot of the tracks on that.
TJ Davis, yeah. And didn't Richard Jacques do some of the? I know he obviously did Sonic or composed Sonic R's soundtrack, but didn't he also do some stuff for Metropolis Street Racer?
Yeah,
I think he did. I think he did most of it, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, I like that soundtrack a lot too, just because it was so varied in all of the different styles that it.
I played MSR when it came out, and I actually only listened to the one song on the metal CD because that was how long every race lasted, and I didn't actually know there was any other songs on there for about 4 years. So I just had the song "Fallen Angel" in my head for the 10 years. It was. I actually only realized there was an entire selection of metal tracks or rock tracks on there. When I played through it a few years ago, I thought it was like one metal song, one rock song. It was very strange. Awful song as well. But off topic slightly.
Well, and that's also a game I think that kind of failed in making it apparent. Like, I don't feel like it was a very, that soundtrack system where you had to pick, you know, each individual track that you could build as part of your station. Like, that was not very intuitive or well established or well communicated. So I could definitely see how that would come to be.
I think that sums up pretty much Sega, doesn't it, in Saturn and Dreamcast. Mm-hmm. So many great ideas, so much, but unfortunately... didn't quite pay off.
I'm gonna say this right now, though. The very best soundtrack on the Dreamcast is Crazy Taxi.
I'm a massive Bad Religion and Offspring fan. More Bad Religion, but Tony Hawk's 2.
Bad Religion.
Bad Religion. I love that.
Dude, I love Bad Religion. Dude, the whole No Control soundtrack was my high school year, man.
Yeah. Well, I used to write for a punk fanzine. So I do a lot of the sort of 90s punk from America, and I'm a big 80s hardcore fan. But I've seen Bad Religion live and Crazy Taxi. I think they actually did play the song, one of the songs, Crazy Taxi. I'm sure everyone knows that song from that. But Tony Hawk's 2, an amazing soundtrack.
It did. But I still feel that Crazy Taxi has the best 90s-esque, well, from an American point of view, the best 90s rendition of what the soundtrack was, in my opinion.
Yeah. I liked Crazy Taxi, but I have to go with Mike on this. I think Tony Hawk was probably hands down the best soundtrack of the 90s on the Dreamcast.
Tony Hawk's 1 was weird though, because Tony Hawk's 1, the opening song for Tony Hawk's 1 is Police Truck by Dead Kennedys.
Yeah, right. That's a great song.
Not really the most appropriate song for a game aimed at all ages, you know, the lyrics are a bit odd, so it's odd that it sort of cuts out. Exactly, so it cuts off at that point in the title sequence, which is really weird, but there's so many good and on the Saturn as well, actually, to my show. I remember playing a lot of Saturn games and soundtracks of both those consoles. Sega, you know, I know obviously Tony Hawk's is a third-party game, but Sega themselves, the music from Sega games is so good.
Well, the music from Panzer Dragoon Zwei and Panzer Dragoon Saga is just absolutely, I mean, from an orchestral standpoint, it's just like, and you've got that tribal mechanic to it. It's just, it's crazy as hell. I really enjoyed
Shenmue as well. Shenmue,
Shenmue has got an awesome, I'm not thinking of anything right off the top of my head that has a really metal-esque vibe to it, because even like something like Crusader Remorse, it was very kind of 16-bitty kind of, it didn't really, it's got a metal soundtrack to it, but it's not, you know, actual instrumentals. It's I mean, it is kind of, but I don't know, I'm kind of drawing a blank on real metal sounding or even punk sounding American punk, not European punk, but American punk sounding soundtracks on any Saturn games, really.
I can't think of any. I know in terms of metal, so the only game on a Dreamcast I can think of which has a better soundtrack than game is Test Drive 6, which is only in any way good due to the fact that they've got the Gary Numan Fear Factory cover of Cars as the opening movie, and then basically some sort of average music for the rest of it. It's not the greatest song of all time, but it's It's a good example of a game which is actually, the music's better than the actual game itself. I hate that game.
Yeah, it really sets the stage for disappointment.
I will state for one of the very few European popish sounding soundtracks on the Dreamcast that I really do enjoy is Marvel vs. Capcom 2. I love the character select. I love that.
Yeah,
I want to take you for a ride.
That's a weird soundtrack,
dude. It just blew my mind back then.
Yeah,
it's so jazzy. I love it. That one, Power Stone soundtrack's great.
Power Stone's the awesome soundtrack. A lot of the sports games, a lot of the extreme sport games have good soundtracks, sort of with bands on. A lot of the American punk stuff, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and Offspring stuff. A lot of the soundtracks.
I take that back. I just remembered what game has an awesome soundtrack on the Sega Saturn, and that's Bulk Slash. Bulk Slash has an awesome metal kind of soundtrack. It's just amazing, dude.
Yeah, I've always tended to appreciate like some of those more jazz or funk centric soundtracks, particularly if they were originally composed versus licensed. But you know, there were certain games that did both that kind of hair metal style very well throughout both the Saturn and Dreamcast tenure, but also my heart always goes to the well, you mentioned the Shenmue soundtrack, so like, you know, Yuzo Koshiro, where you have, you know, a lot of jazzy stuff in that, but even though that game is more recognizable with his more orchestral stuff, but then of course, you know, Streets of Rage, that series, particularly number 2, is one of my favorite soundtracks of all time. So, you know, I absolutely love his work. Although that kind of leads us, maybe if, I don't know if you guys saw the trailer for Streets of Rage 4, but it seemed to have a disappointing lack of Yuzo's work there. So I'm a little, I don't know, I'm a little hesitant to jump on that bandwagon, even though it's been so long since we've seen an officially sanctioned Streets of Rage game.
That announcement split the community quite badly, didn't it?
Yeah. You know, and a lot of, there's criticisms seemingly from every angle. I mean, both visually, where everything's a little more cutesy looking, which I honestly don't really have a problem with that. I'm sure it'll be fine. I mean, I think that developer did a great job with their remaster of the Dragon's Trap, Monster World.
One Boy.
Wonder Boy. What the hell am I? Yeah. So yeah, with their rendition of Wonder Boy, A Dragon's Trap. And so I thought visually that game was very arresting. And I'm not so much put off by that aesthetic being carried over to Streets of Rage 4. But I really hope that they, you know, show us a little more and maybe find a way to win over some fans that were put off by the initial rollout of that trailer.
I would like to touch on this because I happen to be one of the people who's ecstatic about the announcement of Streets of Rage 4. Me and I can't remember who it was we're discussing this. It might have been David from Sega Saturn. I'm not exactly sure who it was I was talking about. I think that us as a community, especially those of us who grew up in the early 90s, we're going to have to start stepping back from this idea of retro gaming being retro gaming if we want these series to stay alive. We don't live in the 16-bit anymore. We don't live in the 8-bit anymore. Games are not going to look like that. And to be honest with you, they look like trash whenever they try to make modern games look like 16-bit and 8-bit games. Pixel art was great for the time. It still looks good sometimes. There's still great games who make it work. But we don't live in that world anymore. I absolutely love the art style and the direction that Streets of Rage 4 is going to. I think it fits what that kind of game can be today, a 2D game that has that artistic avenue to it. But the one thing I'm not too keen on is the music so far. I really feel it's kind of hard to, I mean, because there's a level of nostalgia to all this, man. I mean, Streets of Rage 2 was the very first Sega Genesis game I ever got. So, I mean, it's ingrained in my memory. I still play it from time to time with my wife, and my wife loves to constantly hit me instead of the enemy. So, I mean, there's frustration. I mean, it's amazing. But I'm honestly getting to the point to where I'm so irritated with the community bashing old IPs being brought back and being made modern. It's like, you know, I'm a retro gamer, but I'm really not. I'm a modern gamer who likes retro games. I mean, we had a thing the other day where we were talking about a junkyard, and the Saturn junkyard in this instance, where people were talking about what consoles they're playing, and I was amazed by how many people do not even have 7th gen consoles. It's like, I have been day one purchaser of new consoles since the 7th gen. Like, I like modern games. I'm a PC gamer. I have retro games. I love playing them. Yeah, I appreciate them. I want to show my daughter them. But at the same time, it's like, I'm not stuck in 1995. It's like, you know, I want to appreciate gaming for what it's become. And it's become a very much, it's much more cinematic, open world, make your own adventure. And I think that's a good thing, because gaming is an art form. It's an art form as much as you know, movies are. In fact, it's an interactive medium is what it is. And I think that's why we have so many games that are going in that direction. And I do believe that there is a place for the more arcadey, you know, games in this case, like, you know, Streets of Rage, but it's going to have a cinematic and a narrative flair to it just by nature of it being a modern game.
I think if you got to think about the fact of if games in the 90s, if the technology was there, the games in the 90s would be like they are now. I think, although it's great to look back and say, oh yeah, you know, this game looked a certain way, only because it was limited by the technology at the time. And I think people who sort of want to just... I'm not a massive fan of this sort of massive indie... I love indie games, but I don't think every game has to look like it's made, you know, for a Mega Drive or Genesis, sorry. I don't think it needs to do that. I think you know, technology is great. And I think this whole retro gamer or modern gamer, just a gamer, you know what I mean? I don't care what console it's on. I don't care if I'm playing Space Invaders I had Space Invaders on a watch last week. It was a sort of little watch. A great game. Pong. I can still play Pong and enjoy it. Yeah. Just gaming. I think people get too hung up on the whole sort of, especially with Streets of Rage, I noticed a lot of people complaining because it wasn't just like the original. I mean, like, you know, what? Why? Why would you want me with it? I don't want that.
Exactly. Why do you want to play the exact same game from 20 years ago?
I think one of the big things with at least the retro stuff is that a lot of people didn't have these games growing up. I mean, like for me, example, I never owned a PS2 until 2010. And just now am I having the money to play all these games that I missed because I went with GameCube instead of PS2. So like the Onimusha series or Monster Hunter or some of the Monster Rancher or the Dot Hat games. So I think a lot of it is just the fact that they never had to play it and they want to catch up with it and they really are indulging in that whole library. Like it's new to them, per se.
Yeah, and I think there's almost a broader thread here that we touched on when we were talking about, well, when you, Sam, you were talking about how things changed between what the Panzer Dragoon, those first two games, and Saga, and how those series kind of evolved and what people were expecting, that they wanted a traditional Sonic game on the Saturn, which they never got. You know, I think there's kind of an attachment that we get, and maybe this is kind of a element of us struggling with our nostalgia, or something that is firmly established as something that we really enjoy and have been brought up with. And when we see a lot of those developers or publishers go a different direction with those, I think it does tend to split the community between those who understand and embrace the fact that, hey, these developers want to do something new, or whoever's taking on this IP has a very different interpretation or vision for what they want to get out of that to satisfy some of those artistic goals and player experiences that they, you know, really want to do something different. But there's another half of the community that's kind of repulsed by that idea, that they want that same thing that they grew up with, and any tampering with, and it's almost, I don't know if entitlement is the right word, but people get a sense that, you know, there's this thing that I have been playing since I was a kid, that I will not react positively if somebody is coming in here to tell me that I can no longer come back to that thing, because that's all I want. I think every time a decision or a game comes out that is going to be doing something and innovating in some very different and unexpected ways, it's going to have that natural divisiveness.
It's not limited to games, also. It's limited, you know, TV and movies are very similar. And music to an extent as well.
Right.
Directions. But I think the difference being is that obviously with films, you know, when they remake films, you know, why change the past on some of them? There's no reason to change. You know, some of the 80s films that are being redone, there's no real need to do that. And same with TV to an extent. I'm a massive Star Trek fan, and the new Star Trek Discovery series, it changed too much, and it sort of annoyed the fans. With games, there is no need to stay with the games only came out the way they did due to limitations. Why should developers limit themselves to that still? I think that's what people don't understand, is that there's no point limiting yourself. Again, I'll go back to a game I play a lot, Football Manager, which is a deep management game. If we were still doing the retro style of that, 99% of the features in the game wouldn't be there. And I think the same with racing games. You know, do we go back to pole position style racing games just because that's what people want? It's a very odd... and in fact, pole position is a great example, actually. Pole position style games... there's a game, Horizon Chase. I'm not sure if anyone's played it. Fantastic retro-style game, but it uses new technology. And I think that's... so many people have this great nostalgia, which is fantastic. And, you know, if there wasn't nostalgia, we wouldn't be on this podcast. However, times change, and I think that developers have got to be able to use technology to the best of their abilities.
Piggybacking off of that... some of those innovations, you know, technologically, you know, have proven to be an incredibly fitting transformation for certain genres, like racing, for example. As you're talking about pole position, which, you know, evolved into at least in that superscalar space with OutRun and some of that. Once that genre, you know, had polygonal 3D to work with, or at least competent polygonal 3D to work with. I feel like there was no turning back at that point. I feel like that was such an important milestone or achievement for that genre, that was just perfectly fitting for it to take advantage of a 3D space in a way that it couldn't do when it was all pixel.
I agree. I think the Saturn and Dreamcast are great examples of that as well, with racing especially. You look at Saturn, it's sort of the first signs of home 3D racing, and how much better that is compared to you know, the 16-bit era. And the Dreamcast sort of takes that on and then expands it, you know, NSR with a sort of the sort of depth of that. I think they're great examples of how that genre changed. I think a lot of genres changed from 3D.
Absolutely.
What I would like to just add to that, though, is in reference to the changes that can occur from a technological standpoint. I agree entirely with what you and Mike have both said. as technology changes, things evolve, and I completely agree with that. That's my reasoning for not for wishing that we could get out of this retro mentality. Everything's got to be stuck in retro. However, whenever your example of Sonic Racing and Panzer Dragoon, I feel the reason that there was such a disconnect there is because whenever you're in the same generation and you have created something, and then you so drastically turn away from it, it alienates people. It alienates people is what it does. I mean, it'd be the exact same thing as if Quentin Tarantino was to stop making the movies he does now and try to make a movie that looked like an 80s sitcom. The community and fan base that surrounds his movies, of course we'd go see it, we'd go try it, but I highly doubt that the community would be very inclusive of the changes that were made, because that's so drastically different from the videos, from the movies we've come to love from him, that there becomes a style, an art form that is understood to be associated with an IP. And for you to just, the example of Panzer Dragoon, on-rail shooter with a great story, to a turn-based open world adventure, it's not that, you know, people can't appreciate it. It's just, it's so different that it's not what people were expecting. Yes. It's not what people have become accustomed to. Yes. But it's also a measure of, do the fan base even want that? Yes, there's creative. A creator has the right to do whatever they want to. But at the same time, the fan base has the right to disagree with it. That's the reason why we have series that propel themselves into the echelons of history and those that just die. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a consumer-driven market, whether it be cinema, whether it be games, whatever the case. Yes, it's an art form, but it's a marketplace. The same thing with YouTube or anything else. If you make changes, people are either going to accept those changes or they're going to reject them. And many more times than not, whenever you do something so drastically different, it alienates the fan base. The exact same thing with what Mike's talking about with Discovery. That has literally just put a schism in the Star Trek community.
I think Resident Evil is a great series. Biohazard Resident Evil is a great series to point in that direction as well. You know, the original games were limited by technology. And when they went through the series, you know, we started doing a lot more 3D rather than sort of restricted space. Which was a good use of technology, you know what I mean? Some fans didn't like it, but most people could see that it was going in the right direction. When they done the remakes, they then used technology then to make it, the original ones look amazing, but stick to some of the nostalgia elements as well, whilst ironing out the problems. I think that's a good series in terms of, I know there's many problems around Resident Evil series and things they haven't done right, but I think that's a great example of things, of a series finding the balance between nostalgia and making sure the fans, both new and old, are happy.
And you can see with that series in particular, you can see the conflict between Capcom and the fan base. You know, people like myself, I enjoyed 6 for what it offered, but it wasn't. I didn't come at it as Resident Evil. I came at it as, okay, there's zombies, there's all these other things, and it's basically just outright insanity, action-packed. I mean, the same thing with 5. I could appreciate it for what it was, but it wasn't really Resident Evil. Resident Evil 4 was the only over-the-shoulder Resident Evil I really felt that was Resident Evil, until Resident Evil 7, which in my opinion is just amazing. I mean, it's absolutely amazing, and I really wish the remake had gone with a first-person perspective, because I think it just adds so much to the horror. But
it does. I play Resident Evil 7 on PSVR, and I made it to the house, to the door, and that's it.
That thing is insane. That thing is like, turn the lights out, turn the lights out. It is just like, Jesus Christ.
That was again, technology. But again, you know, some people will probably look at that. I'm sure some people on Twitter are probably complaining about the fact that it didn't use the same sort of styles and ideas that Resident Evil 1 came out with. I mean, you know, you have to move with the times.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think both of you make very great points on this. And it really is all about that balance. And I think, Sam, you're right. On some level, you can appreciate changes more maybe when there's more distance time-wise. So when something has been dormant for a while, you know, it's easier to come back and iterate that in a way that's not going to upset fans necessarily. But to that point, if you're not changing that formula and you're not thinking about how that's going to evolve either technologically or artistically or otherwise, you're going to run the risk of stagnating. And I think that's kind of what Resident Evil did run into with 5 and especially 6, where 4 was such an overwhelming success that they really tried to replicate and capture that lightning in a bottle again, and they couldn't. And it wasn't until they completely overhauled the formula with 7 that I think they won back fans' favor, even if theoretically they thought that fans would have wanted something more like Resident Evil 4 for longer, and didn't work out that way.
And the funniest thing about that is that Resident Evil 5 is the best-selling Resident Evil of all time.
Yeah,
interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that style of art is really what turned me off to the new Resident Evil 2 remake. There's the camera angle. I kind of really want them to go back to that the security camera view.
Fixed person.
Yeah, fixed person cameras.
Well, I think we covered a lot of freaking ground here, guys.
We did the gambit, baby.
Yeah, Sam, you want to just take us home?
Yeah. So from all of us here at the Saturn Junkyard's Titancast, we appreciate all y'all coming by and listening. We also appreciate our guest, Mr. Mike, over there from the Dreamcast Dream Pod, and Patrick from Sega Saturn Shiro. If you want to be able to find all of us, you can find the Titancast crew over on the Junkyard's YouTube page. You can find us on the Junkyard's Facebook page.
The Saturn Junkyard, too.
The Saturn Junkyard. There's a lot of junkyards. There's even a Sega Nomad Junkyard.
Actually, I had to rename it Sega Saturn Junkyard to get around that issue where half of the people joining thought it was about the car manufacturer.
Jesus Christ.
Which was a whole thing, Mike. Yeah, it was a whole thing.
It was insane. Yeah,
I saw.
So, yeah, Mike, where can they find you?
So I will hang around the Dreamcast Junkyard Facebook group, which is the Dreamcast Junkyard. I'm sure I've got that wrong somewhere, but Dreamcast Junkyard website as well, which has got a link to the guide. And I'm on Twitter. I am on Twitter at @space_turnip. That's the word @space_turnip.
And how about you, Patrick? Where can we find you?
I mostly just hang out at the Twitter for the Play Sega Saturn. So for Sega Saturn Shiro's Twitter page. So hit me up on the Sega Saturn Shiro Twitter page at Play Sega Saturn. And the Sega Saturn Facebook group, or Sega Saturn Shiro Facebook group, and page, Play Sega Saturn.
Nice. Yeah, I'm on Twitter as well, at The Virtuous Schlub. And I also do, obviously, I'm on the Saturn Junkyard quite a bit. And we also have a Twitter handle. I think it's just Saturn Junkyard.
Saturn.
You can find us there. And also the Facebook group, if for those of you who are listening who may not be part of that yet. We do have a Facebook group, and it is pretty spectacular. So please join us if you have a burning passion for all things Sega like we do. Nano, where can we find you?
Nowhere. I don't know. I mean, I'm not that active on Twitter, so I barely hang out on the Saturn Junkyard Facebook group. I don't have the time. That group is just too fast paced for me. I just can't keep up with it.
Nuno's getting old, y'all.
Well, we're the same age, aren't we? Me and you, Sam. I'm 29.
This is true.
Okay. As 29 years old, got to stick together. So yeah, I don't have any online presence to speak of outside of what I contribute to the blog and to the YouTube channel for the Saturn Junkyard.
So no Snapchat or anything?
Technically think I have Instagram because I sometimes receive emails from them, but I think I must have installed it when I bought my first smartphone and then never did anything with it. So yeah, nope.
All right, Sam, how about you?
Yeah, you can find me over on YouTube at the Southern Sega Gentleman. You can find me on Facebook, Southern Sega Gentleman. You can find me at all these other places these people hang around with because we're all good buddies and stuff. On Twitter, if you want to find me, it's SMY as in Yankee, LES Drew. That's my Twitter handle. It's crazy as hell. It has nothing to do with Southern Sega Gentleman, but you know, it's cool like that. Instagram, I got one of them. And as I pull it up, because I never post this up, just look at the Southern Sega Gentleman. You'll find me, I promise you. I'm just about everywhere. You can go over to my Facebook fan page and whatever you want to call it, and you can find me all kinds of good places. But we have been going at it for like an hour and 40 minutes, y'all, and some of us have got to get coffee, some of us have got to smoke, and some of us have probably got to piss. This is PG-13, y'all. We got this. Besides all that, it's a pretty good day. We love you. Keep gaming. This is us signing out.
See ya.
Bye.